This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And joining us on this Friday edition of Daybreak is our good friend Chris Hummer, national college football writer for 247sports.com. Chris, how you doing?
Doing great, man. Thanks for having me on.
Holding up in the midst of this pandemic. How are you? Are you getting creative at this point? I know from a work standpoint, we're all trying to come up with ways to cover college football in manners that don't involve practice or spring games, or even right now having a firm understanding of exactly what we're going to have in front of us in the fall. But you've been doing some really great stuff there at 247sports.com, and certainly big reason why we wanted to have you on the podcast today is to talk about the developmental rate at Alabama. And you've touched on this in the past, I know, in terms of how this has worked under Nick Saban in Tuscaloosa. But talk to us a little bit about how this latest analytical piece is maybe a little bit different than what you've done in the past.
Yeah, so I've looked at overall development for top 247 guys specifically. Any guy, like basically four-star prospects every cycle and how they transition to the NFL. Alabama was atop that ranking when we did it earlier this year. But I know just anecdotally from watching the drafts and kind of doing a study similar to this in the past that five stars have a particularly high hit rate at Alabama. Something like that just kind of gets me curious, and I dove into the numbers a little bit, and it's pretty staggering. 51.5% of Alabama five stars, at least those eligible, there are some distinctions, but it doesn't really affect the numbers much, go on to be first-round picks, so more than half. Everywhere else in the country, if you're a five-star and you go to a different school, and it can vary from place to place, but on average, they have a 21.2% rate of being drafted in the first round. So a five-star that picks Alabama is more than doubly likely, actually more like 150% more, or 1.5 times more likely to be drafted in the first round than if he goes anywhere else. And I think it kind of exemplifies why Alabama has been at or near the top of college football for such an extended period of time.
I guess one of the things too, and we'll get into some of this other stuff with you, but when I think of the time frame, 2008 to 2017 is the sample size we're talking about here, a decade essentially. And I think about the different assistant coaches that have cycled through Alabama's program. You know, this isn't a situation like Florida State under Bobby Bowden, where it seemed like in Tallahassee you had 20 years of essentially the same coaching staff even, are a notorious analogy, I know, but the Joe Paterno situation at Penn State. This isn't those days, I guess, is what I'm saying, Chris. You're seeing rapid turnover, a lot of turnover at the assistant level. Some guys are moving on quicker than they had in previous years to head coaching positions, but I guess that makes the number even more impressive.
Yeah, and I think the two teams atop this kind of list of five-star development are Clemson and Alabama, and it's kind of funny how different they are from that. I mean, we've talked about that endlessly already, like through kind of the national championship storylines that we've had. But even from a development perspective, I guess the one kind of steady quality at Alabama is the guy at the top, Nick Saban, who is very rigid in the way he approaches development and the way he structures his staff and the way he goes about things. I think Nick Saban's more flexible than people would give him credit for in other areas, but there are some places where he's not going to bend in the way he goes about developing prospects and kind of his belief in the system that he has is very stringent. And we see that carry through year after year after year. And essentially what Nick Saban's done is he's created this like ecosystem of competition. And I know competition is an important priority everywhere, but Alabama is the only place where you're going to go and have quite as many kind of elite talents as they have on campus. And he pits those guys against each other. And it's a cliche, but iron sharpens iron. And we've seen that happen over and over again at Alabama.
We've heard so much throughout the years, Chris, certainly in the last 15 or 20, about the arms race, facilities, the broadening of staffs to include support staffers, analysts now. I guess in fairness to some of these other programs, when it comes to doing that, and you give Saban credit for this because he's been on sort of the leading edge of that too, more is certainly better when you're trying to develop players. And Alabama's had an advantage there. And here most recently, what we're hearing more about are the two words sports science. It used to be strength and conditioning. Now it seems like it's evolving more and more into what Alabama looks to be transitioning to from Scott Cochran into David Ballou and Matt Ray. Can you envision that sort of perspective, that angle, maybe becoming the next hot thing in terms of the arms race that we talk about a lot?
Yeah, I think in some ways it's already really hot. As you said, Alabama's been at the forefront of kind of these staffs ballooning, and that includes strength and conditioning staffs. I believe we have either hit the first $1 million strength and conditioning coach, or we're close to it. Iowa's strength and conditioning coach makes in the upper 900,000s, and that's kind of a pretty significant mark. When you think about that, we're only, 24 years removed from Steve Spurrier being the first $1 million coach, period.
Yeah.
It shows you how things have changed. But yeah, I'll be really interested to see what happens at Alabama with its new staff. Obviously, Scott Cochran had a significant amount of success in his time. But I think you also saw players, particularly at the linebacker position, getting hurt at a pretty extreme rate. And I think some of the sports science measures will allow players to stay a little healthier. And it'll be interesting to see with stuff like the Whoop app and the Apple Watches that I know Alabama is using, how much further they can push that development, because they've already pushed it to not an extreme level, but a really high level. And Nick Saban's always looking for that kind of next cutting edge thing to put Alabama over the top.
Yeah, Chris, I guess right at 52% or a little under 52% of a conversion rate of five stars into first round picks is pretty impressive. But 82% of five stars being drafted at all, I think is right there with it. Clemson, a little bit of a higher percentage from that perspective. Let me ask you about some of these other programs that you've included here. Was there one or two that surprised you one way or the other? Maybe they didn't sign or amass as many five stars as you would have thought before going into this research, or perhaps you thought their conversion rate to first round picks and or draft picks in general would have been higher. Did you have some things that sort of were reaffirmed for you, and were there some things that perhaps surprised you a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Florida, and I've done these kind of studies for a year or two now, and I'm always surprised to see Florida kind of as high as they are. Those classes from like 2010, 2013, in terms of five stars, were really, really strong. Florida went through a lot of coaching kind of turmoil during that period, but they've been developed in Gainesville no matter what. And I think that kind of speaks to kind of a sleeping giant element of Florida. Dan Mullen we know Florida is capable of winning national championships, but Dan Mullen has proven his chops as a developer time after time. And if he can kind of raise the ceiling of Florida's classes a little bit under his direction, I think Florida could be in a position where it could go on a really, really strong development run. That kind of stands out, especially when you look at Mississippi State, which had a really nice hit rate, a much lower total during his direction. LSU kind of surprised me a little bit too. Their five-star development rate's only at 21.4% in the first rounders. LSU has obviously had no problem getting players drafted. We saw that a couple weeks ago. But I think it would surprise some people to know that most of LSU's picks and like this DBU mantra that we've seen time after time, they've largely been kind of four and three-star guys that have kind of bubbled up, surprisingly. And I think that's a testament to Ed Orgeron and his staff and what they've done recently. I don't mean to be long-winded. On the other side of the coin, I live in Austin. We've discussed this before, but Texas's five-star rate was 10%, like in the first round picks, one out of 10. Like that just says everything you need to know about why Texas is in the hole it's in. But also, I think on the other side of that, you could argue that Texas, perhaps more than any other program, has room to grow in that way, because they are always going to have somewhat of a right of first refusal on kids in the Lone Star State. And if they can get the right coaching staff in there, and I think Tom Herman might be that guy. We've seen, I think we're going to see some people bubble up near the top of the draft next year. There's a place for Texas to kind of grow and to kind of blossom quickly in a way people might not expect.
I guess the study you did as well, Chris, illustrated a changing of the guard too, in some ways, in college football. When you look at 2008-ish and Saban was just really starting to get the thing rolling here in Tuscaloosa. Meanwhile, at Southern Cal, you're starting to wind down with Pete Carroll, Mack Brown, and Austin. Still had some good teams, but it seems like there was sort of that change that was coming in college football.
Oh, no doubt. And it's a change that we all know pivoted to the Southeast. Texas and USC were, at least for me growing up, were like kind of the it teams of college football. I realize it depends on what era you were in. Some people might follow Nebraska. It might have been Alabama for them. It might have been Penn State or whatever. But for me, it was Texas and USC kind of in the early 2000s, and Oklahoma to an extent as well. And Nick Saban's kind of arrival at Alabama, I realize he won a national championship at LSU early in the decade, completely changed the way things work. And there will be books written about this in the future, but kind of that arms race that you talked about earlier and what Nick Saban did to kind of drag Alabama above everybody else, cause everybody to chase. And some schools, especially in the Southeast, spent money to kind of keep up. And other schools out West, like USC, made some poor decisions and some bad hires, and they're still kind of middling as a result. And yeah.
The college football cynic, you know, is going to look at this study and say, well, yeah, look at the teams. Alabama, Clemson, Florida, LSU, Ohio State, Georgia, Florida State, Southern Cal, Texas. I mean, really, how different do you think a study like this will look in 10 years' time? Or are these still going to be pretty much the primary players in your way of sort of projecting things, Chris?
I mean, I guess it depends on how you look at it. If you're talking about, are these going to be the schools mostly recruiting the five stars? Yeah. I mean, I'm sure. Like, Michigan might sneak in there, Penn State, Oklahoma, Miami, potentially, if things get off right, Texas A&M. They might all sneak into that equation. Like, at the end of the day, like, we all know college football is a blue blood sport. The teams that can spend the most and kind of put themselves in the position to attract these five-star players are always going to be at the top. I think why we see dynasties rise and fall and why we see teams be successful and not successful comes down to the hires they make and the coaching staffs they have. And the coaching staffs and the development at those programs is the reason why an Alabama and a Clemson have been atop college football for the last 5 or 6 years. They're atop this five-star development process, or they're atop this five-star development rating. And that translates to the field, because if you're developing your five stars, you're most likely going to be developing everybody else pretty well as well. And that environment has kind of allowed Alabama and Clemson to separate from everybody else, at least maybe until last year. We've seen LSU, Ohio State, and Georgia really push into that space. But it's kind of it's a five-team race right now. And those teams, for the most part, are developing their players at a better ratio than everybody else. It's like, it's pretty self-explanatory at the end of the day, but it is kind of eye-opening to see the numbers rise and fall over time and to kind of follow the teams, because it usually is going to mirror the results on the field pretty well.
You mentioned resources. We're going to hit on that in just a second when we come back with Chris Hunt of 247sports.com, the college football writer on the national level for us there at 247sports.com.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Now, Chris, again, you talked about resources in relation to being able to develop talent at a rate that certainly Alabama, you've illustrated, has been able to do it. The Blue Bloods, as we talked about, with this pandemic that we're going through, and certainly on the college sports level, You also recently had a piece about how it's impacting salaries. And I don't think a lot of folks were surprised to read that even though Iowa State is a Power Five program technically, that if there was going to be an athletic department at the Power Five level that was going to be impacted negatively and perhaps have to make some concessions to try to compete at that level, it would be a place like Iowa State. And so with that in mind, is this a stopgap type situation, you think, at places like Iowa State where bonuses are being withheld or deferred at best, I guess, and in trying to maintain contact with the programs and athletic departments that the Iowa States of Power Five are going to have to compete with?
I think for now, it's kind of those mid-tier Power Five program teams that you're going to see kind of step into that area. I think yesterday, Wednesday, Arizona had Kevin Sumlin and their head coaches take a 20% pay cut. I don't think it's exclusive to a program like Iowa State that has an athletic department budget of $80 million. But at the end of the day, $80 million sounds a heck of a lot different than, I think, Texas, which has a budget of $220 million. I think that was a pretty significant gap. So they're not necessarily on a level playing field. What I would say about potential cuts and potential salary reductions in the future, a lot of those bigger schools that we're talking about earlier in the five-star development are probably going to be fine in the short term. A lot of them have reserves, at least to a point. But those are also the schools that are spending on facility upgrades and coaching buyouts and everything else at a pretty high rate. I think if we have kind of an extended period where the economy lapses and college football season's affected, which affects everything about the bottom line of college athletics, we're going to start seeing some of the bigger schools hurting too. They might make more money, but they also spend more money than everybody else. And college athletics has kind of turned into spend what you got. And if that's the case, like, I don't anticipate like Alabama going to Nick Saban saying like, can you please take a pay cut? But I can see a world in which the salaries that have kind of rapidly risen in college football start to slow down a little bit because it's just not an environment conducive to people getting paid a lot of money, or at least getting paid more money than they are now.
Where are you at as we get into mid-May now, or head towards mid-May, in terms of this whole, will they play, won't they play, will they play later? Have you heard or been swayed in a way by anything since we last spoke that has you feeling a little more of a definitive thought about what college football in 2020 might look like?
Yeah, actually, briefly, I want to point out, it's not just those, I mean, it is for the most part the smaller athletic departments in the Power Five, but Oregon and USC have both taken,
big
cuts already. So, like, it's not just exclusively the Iowa States of the world. In terms of football in the fall, I continue to believe we're going to have some sort of college football season in 2020. I've heard lots of different scenarios about how that could go and what could happen. I'm of the opinion right now that the most likely thing is we have some sort of delay in the fall, perhaps cutting the non-conference schedule, which comes with its own set of hurdles because the non-conference schedule is worth a lot of money to both the teams that host the games and the teams that get paid to go play the games. But I think there is a significant kind of hope that they will be able to play football at some point, maybe in early October or late October, to get people on the field. The spring football season has been thrown out there a lot, but I think the general preference is to have everything occur in the fall if possible. And realistically, if you cut out non-conference games and you push the season back a little bit and you eliminate the bye weeks, you could start playing football in late October and still finish the season on time in terms of the college football playoff and everything else. Like, you could get to January 1st and have a 9-game schedule played or a 10-game schedule played with conference championship games if you kind of reduce everything happening around it. So I think that's possible, but I think there's going to certainly be some holdouts over things like students on campus and where it's safe to reopen and where it's not. So we're still pretty far from an answer, I think. But I think there's more positivity around a season right now than there was maybe a couple weeks ago.
Here's the one thing I haven't heard or at least had made clear to me. We hear about having to have students on campus. I haven't heard anyone say all the students have to be back on campus. So in other words, if there is a staggered opening for universities around the country, is it plausible to think that with that type of scenario, you could play football in the fall if you don't have all the students back? You get where I'm going with that?
Yeah, I think I've had a couple of athletic directors mention similar things. I think there's going to be a significant push that if most colleges can play and most colleges have people on campus, that they want everybody else to. And I think right now you're seeing presidents and chancellors hold the line saying, like, without students, like, it's impossible to play football. But like, if we're in a new reality in terms of what classes look like, athletes are also students at the end of the day, and they're taking those classes online. I think you could argue that you're technically still on campus and you're technically still in classes. So I think you're going to start hearing arguments like that to the point where, like, if you're still taking classes and you're still a student, it's fair to say you can do kind of those extracurricular activities that make college what it is. And I think that's the argument you're going to hear from people.
Well, there you go. Chris Hummer, we got to come up with a nickname for the analytical one, Chris Hummer. I'm not sure what we're going to, the accountant, calculating Chris Hummer, but does just an outstanding job keeping you abreast of what's going on in college football for us there at 247sports.com. As always, Chris, we appreciate it.
Anytime, man. And don't tout my math skills too much. I still struggle with basic algebra.
Well, of course you did. That's why you're right. That's what happened to all of us. You know, if any of us would have been good at math, we wouldn't have been in this profession. I can promise you that. No, Chris, we appreciate it, my man. You're a lot better with it than I'll ever be. I'm sure of that. But Chris does a great job, and we certainly appreciate him here at BamaOnline.com and part of the Built by Bama Online podcast, which if you haven't already, we certainly hope you will consider strongly subscribing to the Built by Bama Online podcast. Also, leave us a rating, a review while you're there. We would appreciate it, and we definitely appreciate you. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.